This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello everybody out there in Radio Land. This is Patricia W. Fisher for Readers Entertainment Radio. And as you can tell, I was a couple of weeks off enjoying the summer a little bit with my family. And now we are back. And right before Romance Writers of America conference next week in Denver, where I'll be with 2,000 to 2,500 other amazing writers, all in different stages of their writing careers and looking at all sorts of amazing workshops and meet and greets and general networking. So if you will be there, please don't hesitate to say hi. And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody. Also this month, it is Be Kind to our Set a Good Example for Kids Month, and I think that we can all do that a little bit better than some of us have been doing. And it's just important that we set a good example, even if we're frustrated. So please don't hesitate to do that. But now, in that vein of things, we are talking about doing well for kids and setting a good example. And our guest today, Miss Joanne Brock, is a wonderful example of that. She has over 90 romance novels in various subgenres. She enjoys small-town family sagas as much as high drama and glitz and glamour. She's a former Golden Heart recipient. She's a four-time Rita finalist. And Ritas, if you don't know, are kind of the Oscars of the romance writers industry. Her work has been reprinted in 26 countries and translated into 20 languages. And after receiving her master's degree in literature from the University of Louisville, Joanne went on to teaching film, writing, and fiction at the college level. She also enjoys sharing her passion for the arts and creative workshops, career fairs, and with aspiring writers she meets online. Her most recent release was out July 1st, The Forbidden Brother from Harlequin. And you can find her at her website, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Amazon, and sign up for her newsletter. And all of those links I have in the description of the show. But let's welcome Miss Joanne. How are you today?
Hey there. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Good. So you are on the East Coast. How's it going over there weather-wise?
Beautiful. It's beautiful. We need rain, but I'm loving the warm weather every day. It's lovely.
Cool. I watch the weather because I have family and friends on the East Coast, but I also noticed today that popped up that a white shark in the Atlantic has done a complete U-turn, so everybody's all in the science world's all a fluster because they're trying to figure out why the shark turns. So you might want to not go in the deeper water for the weekend fun.
This summer, I'm closer to Lake Champlain. So luckily there are no sharks in Lake Champlain, so I'm not going to worry about it.
But you don't have to. Do you worry about Chessie? You ever see that out there?
I keep hoping for a sighting, but no, I've never seen the Lake Champlain monster.
Well, and if you don't know, there's this wonderful legend, just kind of like in the vein of Ogopogo and Nessie, that Chessie is out there somewhere. So, you know, if you see her, snap a picture and, you know, tag us, let us know you see it. So you have a brand new book out, Forbidden Brother. It's like you've written over 90 books, and people would ask you, where do you get – I mean, I know you get this asked a lot – our stories are endless, right? I mean, you just kind of keep collecting them as you go along and tuck them away for
Absolutely.
Later. What are your some of your favorite places to find those bits of inspiration?
Well, I'm heading to a romance writer conference next week, and actually sitting in the airport by myself, I'm looking forward to that as creative fodder because there are a wealth of stories going on around me when I travel, and especially in an airport, and just the little snippets, the couples I see, things from how people are dressed to how a couple behaves together, the body language, it's all drama. And if you can very much get caught up in that drama, and it will spark ideas all over the place. You know, people waiting by themselves or having tearful conversations with a loved one, you know, because of a missed flight or this or that. The world is full of stories if you care to look around and find them. And I do. And actually, storytelling has been a wonderful outlet for me because I've always been a naturally curious person. I'm a rather quiet person. If you meet me face-to-face, I'm not the most outgoing girl in the room ever. I'm usually in a corner listening and watching. And storytelling has given me a way to connect for my voice that I'm comfortable with. And I love taking the stories that I find in the world and thinking about them and putting my own spin on them and creating them for romance readers to enjoy. So I would say things like, you know, restaurants, travel, airports, any place where I can do lots of people watching, I always come home full of story ideas.
It's fun because even today, my friend is at the airport on the East Coast, and I think in Boston, and a plane that she was waiting on, she texted me and said, it's delayed. You know, she's kind of frustrated. But then she realized it was delayed because the plane that came in slid off the runway.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. So she said, everybody, they're trying to get that plane situated so they can fly out. And, of course, everybody in her area and waiting area has now hit the bar because they're afraid of not getting I said, send me conversations, you know. And so I think that's fun, too, because once people know you're a storyteller, and I'm sure you've had this happen, people approach you about stories that they've – things they've seen and things they've heard and that kind of thing. I mean, it's always amazing what people want to come to you with. What are some of the most interesting ones that you've heard?
You know, I've had a retired police detective that – wanted to talk to me about his stories, you know, maybe a memoir piece or maybe spinning them into fiction, which I was very interested in, but I write so much on my own. I find it hard. I don't have time to tell other people's stories. You know, I wish if we had just met at a bar and he had regaled me with one of his tales from the field, that would have been very interesting and, you know, might have ended up in one of my books, but I certainly wouldn't steal someone's story if they're hoping to do something with it on their own. But I love hearing people's stories. And it's funny you mentioned the flight delay because actually I've always credited my own first attempts at writing a romance novel to a flight delay. I picked up a book long ago when I was stuck in the Newark airport. I was trying to get somewhere. My flight was delayed. So I went to instead of the bar, I went to the airport bookstore and I picked up Elizabeth Lowell, one of her historical romances that took place in medieval Scotland. And I was so entranced and so completely swept away that when my flight got delayed a second time, I didn't even care. I was glad to just sit there because I was in another world and the story was so gripping. And I read that entire book in the airport. And I have always thought that that was a special kind of magic, that the book had the power to completely transport me to the point where I didn't care. That is, to me, represents escapism at its most wonderful, giving me an outlet to be somewhere else, to completely surround me, immerse me in a different world. It's kind of a time travel. And I loved that experience and it really stuck with me. And I knew at that time I was in my graduate program at University of Louisville and I was studying English and literature and I loved books, but didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And really, Elizabeth Lowell's book helped me figure out, you know what, I might like to try my hand at that kind of storytelling magic to see if I could ever transport someone the way that, you know, it was a real gift that she gave me that day. And that was very much an inspiration for me sitting down to try and write a romance novel. I still don't know if I have the talent that she does, but it's been a really fun past almost two decades trying, you know, working on it. I see myself get closer. I love storytelling and I absolutely get letters today from readers who say, your book completely took me away. So I know it works for some people. I can create that magic for my readers sometimes and that's a thrill. That's very fulfilling.
I think that's what's a lot of fun about doing what we do is someone gave us a gift, like you're talking about, Elizabeth Lowell. For me, it was Jude Devereaux, and, you know, transporting us somewhere else and then hoping at some point, you know, I'd like to give this gift as well to someone. And it just keeps perpetuating. And I think it's a very special thing that we get to do. Is it the most important thing? I don't know. I think it depends on the person who's reading your book. But I think it's certainly something that we all love to do, and people love stories. I mean, no matter how you tell them.
Yeah.
So we're here. We're here talking to the wonderful author Joanne Rock, and tell me a little bit about your most recent book, The Forbidden Brother. It came out July 1st. Tell us a little bit about that one.
This is part of my McNeil Magnets story series for Desire. And Harlequin Desire, the series, is very kind of glitz and glamour, scandals, family sagas, secrets. And I started with stories a year ago for my McNeil Magnets, and they started out in Manhattan. And I had three brothers, wrote the stories, and they came out close together. And then in the middle of those stories, I realized that there was a secret family. The father had had an affair. So there were three more McNeils, and they had grown up in the Caribbean, unconnected from this family. So I wrote three more. And while I was writing those, I realized, oh, wait a minute, there was, you know, a brother who actually is estranged from the family, and his father no longer acknowledges him. And he's got a whole family out in Cheyenne. So it's just been fun. The fact that Desire has built itself around secrets and scandal gave me a lot of creative fodder, and I had a lot of fun uncovering secrets myself and finding more branches of this family. So right now with The Forbidden Brother, it's my first story of the Cheyenne McNeils family, and they're out in Wyoming, and these are ranchers. So they're have a little bit of, from my other McNeil stories, but they're a lot of fun. And these three books, The Forbidden Brother, Wild Wyoming Nights, and One Night Scandal, come out July, August, and September of 2018. And the stories are very tightly connected, kind of playing around with the idea inspired by bingeable television, where there's, you know, the romance is tied up in each story, but there are cliffhanger elements at the end of the book so that you, I hope, need to go get the next one and find out what's going on with the family, because the family saga is half the fun. You know, the romance is tied up in each book, but the family saga continues, and there are compelling secrets and interesting things going on all the time with this family. So I've had a lot of fun writing it.
And it's interesting,
and the Forbidden Brother actually.
Yeah.
Go ahead. The Forbidden Brother is actually kind of a mix-up story where he's a twin, and I love twin stories. And my heroine is actually looking for his twin. So she mistakes him in a kind of a bar mix-up, thinking that she's talking to his twin brother. And, you know, kind of mayhem, sexy mayhem ensues from there. And I just think that's a really kind of fun premise, too. It's something that we did a lot back when I wrote for a line called Harlequin Temptation. And actually, even Harlequin Blaze carried over a miniseries called The Wrong Bed, which had a hook of mix-ups, where it might be a blind date set up, or somehow you ended up with the wrong person. And although The Forbidden Brother is not a wrong bed story, it's got that element of a little bit of a mix-up, so that there is the surprise after, oh, I thought you were so-and-so.
Right.
So that, to me, the book has a lot of appeal because of that, too. And then next month, the other twin, we get to meet him, and it's his romance.
And then the third book is who?
That's another brother in the family who distanced himself from the twins. He's very much his own man, but he is the third McNeil brother in the Cheyenne McNeil family.
Wow. And so do you have a technique, or how do you keep all of them, you know, organized? Because you have layers within layers of your families and your series. And so, you know, Bob in book one still has to have blue eyes in book seven. You know, he can't have different color eyes.
Yeah.
So how do you keep organized, all this organized?
I try to, you know, I love keeping a family tree chart. I keep an ongoing document in Google Docs so that anytime a character comes up, I copy and paste the description I've written and put that in my main file so that I can come back to it. And I know this is what that character looks like. And what I really like beyond a written description, what's ideal for me is if I go through and find photos of, you know, actors, actresses, or, you know, baseball players, just anyone famous that I can pull a photo from online and put that next to it. And I say, this is Cody McNeil. That's what he looks like. So So even if I describe them a little bit differently in another book, and hopefully I do, it's not always the same, it's still inspired by that same face. So that's really helpful to me when I'm always looking at the same image and can remember, oh yeah, that's who I, you know, kind of base the physical look of that character on. But definitely a lot of notes are required for, as a series gets longer, to remember what you said about family connections or when grandma passed away or why grandma passed away. It's important to tuck all those notes away for consistency, because readers want that.
Yes. And, you know, you've got such a wonderfully, beautifully active Pinterest page that you have a lot of that on there. And that's always a lot of fun. And I'm looking at it, and I love the fact that you have over 42,000 things on friendship. I mean, that's amazing.
And, you know, a lot of my Pinterest pages are, you know, me personally in an effort to connect with readers, so that a lot of the things that I'm putting out there are things that appeal to me. I've kind of crafted this everyday joy, simple abundance, you know, pleasures of life being close to home, and trying to maintain that. I find the romance community very personally uplifting. People who are drawn to romance are often people who appreciate the affirmation of things going right in the end, and the underlying message of romance, that if we work hard enough at our relationships, our friendships, our romantic relationships, our family, that if we put the work into those relationships, they will reward us with love, with fulfillment, with happiness, that things will turn out okay in the end. And, you know, so the romance message inspires me, the romance community inspires me, and I try to give back that kind of thing, the positive tidbits in the world that can, you know, seem so crazy some days. I try to create that world for my readers. If they come to my Pinterest page or my Facebook page, it is a place where we're focusing on everyday joy and romance and friendships and the strength of relationships and just a happy, affirming place, I hope.
Right. I think, too, I've been asked by different people over different stages of my career, and I'm sure you've been asked, too. It's like the comment of, when are you going to write a real book type thing? And it's like, what's wrong with Happily Ever After? It's almost because I think we're so inundated with the sadness and the badness and the chaos of life. The idea of Happily Ever After, it's like, well, why would you even write about that? Because it's not reality. It's like, of course it's reality. If it weren't reality, it would be a terrible world.
Right.
So I think that's important, that the Happily Ever After holds its own for sure. And obviously readers and writers and people love reading it. That's what makes the romance industry so absolutely wonderful to work in and meet, you know, fellow writers. So when you're writing, with all the books that you've written, have there been situations where people have approached you and said, but what about this character? And it wasn't anybody you planned to write about. Have there been books come from that, from reader suggestions?
Not really, because I have to say that usually when a reader asks me about a character and feels that there's a story there, it's because I felt there was a story there and put those tidbits in there that would make a reader interested and curious about them. And really, even if I don't have a contract with a publisher to write those books, I love making sure that there are lots of people in a book that could have a story, so that, you know, I know that this is this character's backstory if I have the opportunity to ever write that. I like to think that I create a fairly rich world, and that even my more villainous characters are multifaceted and have interesting backstories, relationships, so that while we don't necessarily want to root for them, we're interested and compelled by them. You know, how did they get that way? What made them that way? So I would hope that's very much a part of all of my characters and in my stories. And I've always got a file going of, if I have the opportunity, I'd love to go back and write, you know, more on this or this person's story or that sister's story that is tucked away. But, you know, just, you know how that is. We don't always have the opportunities to write all of all of the ideas that are out there, but I do like to just leave myself those creative hooks so that I can get back to that character quickly. And if I pick it up even 5 years from now, I can say, ooh, this is an interesting character to write.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that as we write, we're like, oh, yes, I'll write this, and then four other characters show up or four other ideas.
Right.
So it's almost like trying to grab fireworks that just keep going off. You just can't possibly get them all. So tell me something of all the books you've written, and you talk about Elizabeth Lowell's book and Transporting, mm-hmm. but had you considered writing before reading her book? Like writing romance?
Not really. I had been writing articles. I went to get my undergraduate degree in public communications, and I thought that would be fun. I pictured myself as being, because I'm interested in people, I thought I would be happy in a job immersed in people. And I think it takes a kind of wisdom getting to know yourself a little bit more, that even though I'm fascinated by people, I'm kind of introverted, and I'm more naturally refueled by alone time. So quickly I realized, wait a minute, this career isn't going to be that great. You know what? I've always loved books. I don't know what I'm going to do with that English degree and English master's, but I'm going to go back and study it, because I think if you follow your passion, doors will open. So,
sure.
You know, that's what I did. And it was I started writing the opening of a romance novel while I was waiting for my graduate program to begin, because that Newark trip kind of happened while I was waiting to get into for my program to start. And
okay.
I thought, well, maybe I could be a romance writer. That was very much happening at the same time that I started my program at the University of Louisville. So I have very happy memories of writing my first opening, my prologue, under a big tree with all the cardinals chirping around on the campus at U of L that first year. And then as soon as my classes started, I realized I don't have time for this. Oh my gosh,
right.
Because I was inundated. And I was also teaching, because I signed on to do the teaching assistantship. So I was teaching freshman comp in order to go to school there. And it
right.
was so busy and so wonderful. It was an amazing experience, but it took a while to get back to my own writing. And I have to say that during that time, when I was reading very dense critical literary theory, I needed to come back every now and again to read a romance novel just for that.
Mm-hmm.
I was enjoying this escapism so much at that time to kind of clear my head out and go somewhere else to get away from the dense reading. And then after I finished my degree, I thought, you know, the idea was still with me 2 years later. And I thought, if it stuck with me, I'm going to try this and really give it a go.
So when you were reading all those freshman comps, were you seeing things that people were making the same mistakes over and over again? And you're like, oh, well, I'll make sure not to make those grammatical errors.
Freshman composition papers are usually the kinds of things where they spell definitely, like defiantly. they were errors that weren't an issue for me. But I loved freshman composition. And there's always a handful of writers in the classes where you can see how much they love writing. And it was fun
sure.
to give them feedback on their papers, because you could tell they had that sensibility that they loved writing. And people like that, they just eat up the feedback the same way that I did on all my English papers. I couldn't wait to hear what somebody thought about it. And that certainly was very easy to spot the people who loved writing.
Cool. So what haven't you written that you want to write?
You know, I wrote, I think just one time travel story. Yeah, one time travel. And
uh-huh.
I have always thought that was fascinating. It is very much a niche market. There aren't a lot of people clamoring to buy it. Therefore, you know, publishers aren't always excited if you come at them and say, I want to write a time travel story. You know, they
sure.
say, write contemporary romance. That's what, what sells best.
Right.
And I love contemporary romance, but I have always had an itch to do some time travel pieces. I love the Middle Ages. My first story that I started writing under that tree on the U of L campus, that was a medieval. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote 5 full medieval manuscripts before I said, I am shooting myself in the foot when so many more people are buying contemporary romance. Why don't I just try a contemporary romance? And the story flew off my fingers. It, you know, it felt so fast to write. I wasn't, as much as I love the research, I didn't need the research. I just wrote it. And that's a sign when something comes together so well. That was my first sale. So, and I did go back and work on the medievals because I love it. I feel like a little piece of my heart is always in the Middle Ages. And I very much love historicals. I had 10 full-length Harlequin historicals come out, and a bunch of historical novellas I wrote for Harlequin as well. But it's just never been, it's particularly in the U.S., it's for me anyways, it certainly wasn't as big of a seller as what the contemporary romance has been. That's been a real good spot for me, contemporary romance. But I would love to write some time travel someday. You know, I've got lots and lots of time.
Yeah. Well, so those medieval ones, are they still sitting under your bed basically and tucked away for now?
No. I went to sell all of the manuscripts. Five that I wrote. I went back and revised the fifth one, because the fifth one was the closest, you know what I mean? And then I had the skills, I was a better writer, and then I went back and wrote, you know, worked on number four. And I, you know, got that one. And then the last book that I worked on was my very first baby, and really just massaged it into publication-worthy status and got that sell too. But it's funny because the first book that I wrote was set in Bohemia. And you just, it's one of those things where in the romance writing community, we know you don't start a story somewhere like that because it's kind of an oddball setting. People want, you know, a London or France or something that's a little bit more accessible for modern readers that they see all the time. There are certain, or, you know, a Scottish Highlander, those are very popular, but you know, no one
familiarity
really goes around saying, I want a Bohemia story. And mine was in Bohemia, and I had so much fun researching the area. And they traveled into Prague at some point, and the castles that were in Prague at that time. But those were the kinds of things that I learned on the journey. By the next book, I said, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to write a book set in Scotland. And with each book, I kind of figured out some more things that made my story be able to sell. There's so many things that you don't know. Just because you can write doesn't mean you can tell a good story or that you understand what a romance reader wants. It was a huge learning curve for me, and I went really slowly. But I have to say I very much enjoyed it.
Cool. So we've got about 2 minutes left. Tell me what is on your to-be-read pile.
My to-be-read? Oh, my goodness.
I know.
I'm
how
really
tall
enjoying
is that pile, right?
Huge. I will come home next week from the Romance Writers of America conference in Denver with a huge stack of romances. You know, I'm always looking for the new Sarah McLean. She's got The Day of the Duchess coming up. The Betting Vow by Cam Jackson is something that I want to dive into. And I always read for my friend Catherine Mann, who also writes for Harlequin Desire. So actually, it's great because I'm her critique partner. I always read her books before anybody else. And that's a real treat because she's supremely talented.
Well, that's what's fun about being in this field is a lot of your friends, you see when you see their books, you're like, I remember reading that chapter one when it was very first begun as critique. And that's huge. So I always tell people, if you really want to write, you get into a group that's as serious about writing as you are. That's your first start.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Ms. Joanne. We really appreciate it, and we will see you next week in Denver. And if anyone else is going, please don't hesitate to give us a shout. And this is Patricia W. Fisher for Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, The Forbidden Brother is already out with Harlequin. You can also get it on Amazon by Joanne Rock. And keep reading, everybody.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.